Welcome to the Business of Show Business with me, Jamie Boddy. I'm joined by industry experts and up-and-coming creatives as we unpack the skills, stories, and side hustles behind the entertainment and creative industries. So if you are ready to thrive and not just survive in showbiz and the arts and culture sector, you're in the right place. We're talking all things publicity, from crisis PRs to opening nights, and how PR can really help leverage a personal brand and get bums on seats for a show, as we talk the business of show business. Chloe, how is it going today?
Yeah, very good. Enjoying the London sun, or trying to.
Yeah, isn't that rare occasion? I feel like I've seen you so much the last couple of days at press nights.
You have. It's been a busy time, huh?
And now I've trapped you. I've recruited you. Yeah.
I'm happy to be trapped. Yeah.
So PR is, I guess for most businesses, it is kind of like a unsung hero sometimes. But in entertainment, PR is so crucial to getting press coverage, bums on seats. So in your own words, though, can you describe or even tell us what PR is? Because you probably do so much day to day.
I do a lot of telling my clients what PR is as well. So PR is fundamentally about raising the profile of whoever we're working with, whether it's a person or a show, through media attention. So that could be features in lovely newspapers, magazines, print. It could be interviews and coverage online, or it could be radio and telly. Or even working with influencers, podcasts, basically anything that counts as a media platform. My job is to try and get coverage for our clients on that platform.
So you studied the history of art. So how did you get from that? And I know you do classical singing as well, but how did you get from that to kind of being an entertainment PR? Because they're quite worlds apart, or maybe they're not.
So they are and they're not. I'm an 18th century British drawing specialist, which is rather niche and not necessarily something useful for my day to day. But while I was still studying, I got involved with running an important student-led exhibition. And you worked on this thing for 3 years and nobody came to see it. And my brain was going, why on earth am I working on this project for 3 years and no one's going to come? I don't understand. So I self-taught PR, and I'd always gone to the theatre, and I'm a trained singer, as you said, and I started doing PR in the arts based on history of art, and just wasn't quite sitting right with me. I love art and I love galleries, but I needed something a bit more. And then I was offered a theatre job and went, oh, hang on a moment. And it suddenly all made sense.
I feel like I should have got you to sketch me, perhaps.
No, absolutely not.
So you work with clients, as you said, you do work with museums and galleries, but you work with theatres, you work with shows, you also do personal PR. What attracts you to a project? Is it as soon as you see something, it's like shiny moments, you're like, I think I can get them here, there and everywhere?
Sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's just a gut reaction of going, this sounds like a really interesting or exciting project, or the people are absolutely lovely and we think they've got such scope to do well or develop in the industry and we know we can help them. Or sometimes you do look at a project and go, oh my God, I know I can land this amazing attention, and that's really exciting. So it's a range of things, but it comes down a lot to the people and the type of project. It sounds corny, but for me, we have to love who we're working with. And if we don't, and then we're going to be bored by a project, what's the point in doing it?
What is the measure of success then with PR? Because I guess that's hard, because you've probably got some clients that are like, I need to be in this national newspaper, or some people might want clicks or views on a video. Like, is there a measure of success, or how do you know you've done a good job, or when do you feel satisfied?
I mean, in theory, you never feel satisfied because you always want more. And that should be the sign of a good PR, I think, that you never really stop. You always keep going. So, you know, you can land the front page of a newspaper, but you still need to keep pitching. Success is such a tricky one to define because it can't be defined, really. You know, PR isn't a trackable metric by nature of the fact you're not paying for the coverage. So somebody may bring me on and therefore pay CNC to do a job for them, but I'm not paying anybody to do an interview or to cover the show. So it's very hard to track. You know, we can land the same coverage for two shows, and one could cause that show to sell out, and one could sell two tickets. So I always say that you have to think about PR as profile. It will raise the profile, and that will maybe and hopefully help. But if it doesn't, maybe it will help for further down the line, or for funding applications, or for bringing on board other partners. So success varies from client to client. It's really getting as much press coverage as possible and working to the aims you've chatted through with clients.
I think that will resonate with a lot of people, because anyone in the arts, success, as you said, how do you define it? Or when you get to what you think success is, you kind of then plateau and you're like, what's next? What's the next like shiny thing? So.
And success also means different things for different people, I think. Like, I had a really interesting chat with a fine artist this week who's doing a show, an amazing historic house. And actually what she wants is to work with social media influencers and local press. So for her, that would be success. She doesn't actually care for various reasons about the art media. So, you know, we could land her something phenomenal in Art Magazine and I'm sure she'd be happy and that would be lovely, but it's not actually what she wants. So success for different projects can be completely different.
You spoke about profile there, and you now a new kind of strand to CNC is the personal PR. So you've got lots of theatre, actors, so forth on your roster. Why do you think it's important now for performers or freelance creatives to kind of think about their personal brand more, really, and kind of getting their profile out there?
I think, I mean, it's always been a competitive industry, but that has increased and increased and increased, and there's so much noise. And obviously somebody has to be talented to do well in the industry, but if they're not known and they don't have a voice and they don't have something to say, I think it can be much harder to cut through that level of competition. And especially for creatives or cast who are involved in very large shows where there are tons of people involved, and it may be an excellent show PR, but fundamentally they probably can't, you know, sort the messaging out for every single creative and every single cast member. So I think that's when personal PR is so important for people in the industry.
One thing I mentioned when I lecture at colleges is about how social media doesn't mean you necessarily have to have 25,000 followers or whatever it is, but you need like a strong personal brand. Is that something now as a PR, like a founder of a company, do you sometimes look at cast members' social media, not to think, oh, that's the person that needs to be spotlighted more, but to think, you know what, they've got a wholesome, authentic brand online. That might be the person we can then put up for a radio interview or get interviewed for a magazine.
100%, because it's a really good way as well to see how comfortable people are doing things, how they present themselves. So, you know, we have some clients who tell us, for example, they don't want to do radio or podcast and they don't want to do something like that. They prefer to just do written. Or we have some people who absolutely excel when you put them on camera. So social media, if somebody seems shy and isn't necessarily forthcoming with that information, is an amazing way to get a sense of a person. And also find out about people's hobbies, the things they may talk about in an interview. Just get a sense of who you're working with.
I'm so glad you said that, because I often say to fresh grads as well, like, you're human, you're not a robot. Like, you are allowed to have a hobby and you can post photos that aren't specifically industry. So you've heard it here. So from a PR specialist, yeah, it's good to kind of see that side of actors and freelancers.
You need to be a person. And of course, that's not to say you need to share your entire life on your social media and everyone needs to know everything about you, because it is important to have that distinction. But also, yeah, we don't want people to be robots. We need to know who they are and who we're dealing with. And also that's when huge fan bases build, when they're actually able to get to know certainly a version of a person.
I'm so glad she said that. I'm looking right down, I'm breaking the fourth wall here, but that's so important, because I literally say to people all the time, because sometimes people get paralyzed on what to post, because when you can post anything, you post nothing. So I'm so glad that you said just be a human. I think that will resonate with people, whether they're on stage or backstage. Kind of springboarding off that, backstage personas now are also personal brands. Like, it's not just about the performer, is it anymore? Do you often work with shows or venues where you have to almost, not to say media train, but you're getting people in front of the camera who are choreographers, costume designers, architects? Is that becoming more common as well?
100%, because I think they've got such an interesting story to tell, and they're so much, you know, owning the responsibility for what that show looks like. So they're really interesting people to talk to. And especially with long running shows as well, when maybe you've used the cast up front at the beginning of a campaign, being able to use the creatives and have them talk to people and do interviews and talk about the journey of the show, I think is really crucial. What you don't want to do, you know, no matter how great the lead actor is, you can't be pitching them out constantly for a year, because people will go, well, we just read that exact same interview in whatever publication it was a couple of weeks before. So that's why I think it's also so important to have that variety of who can talk about a project, and just being able to shine a light on the incredible people who are behind the scenes, because without them, we wouldn't have the shows.
Exactly. There's only so many exclusives one person can have, a one personal brand.
Exactly.
Are there any misconceptions or myths then about PR that you hear that you kind of want to set straight? Or when someone comes to you and they're like, oh, you're going to do this, 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 and you're like, okay, but to do this, this, and this, we need to do this. So are there any myths or misconceptions about PR?
Oh, I suppose it's maybe less of a myth, but more of a lack of understanding. So we'll often get people come to us and go, oh, well, I just spoke to so-and-so at another agency and they promised me a double page in The Guardian. And I go, oh, well, that's lovely. They must have a magic wand that I have not found in 15 years. And you should use them, because I can't make that promise. And I think that's not understanding that, you know, we can have excellent relationships, which of course we do, with all of the press. But it doesn't mean they're going to cover every project we work on, because that's just not the nature of the sector at the moment. So I suppose that's the biggest myth. If you don't get press coverage, it doesn't mean a PR's not worked for it.
Well, I know, having worked in arts marketing as well, when sometimes people think, oh, I've been told I can get 100,000 views or 100,000 clicks. And you're like, but there's so much more to that jigsaw piece of like time of day, what platforms it uses on, algorithms. So I guess for you, it's exactly the same, isn't it? You may have a story that is so timely, but then something else in the world happens which shifts the whole spread of that newspaper.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I still remember when the Queen passed away, what, a couple of years ago now? No, longer. A while ago.
R.I.P. Queen.
We had an event that was the night before the funeral. That, you know, in theory, we were, had this amazing list of press attendants and all things like that. And then something like that happens and every press photographer obviously has somewhere else to be. So, sometimes things are just completely out of your control.
Again, it's a big thing. I'm trying to master it myself of controlling the controllables.
Yeah.
Because there's so much in our industry that we don't control.
Of course. And it's not just the industries, it's the world as well. It's out of our hands sometimes.
So it sounds like a big part of what you do is kind of that networking, it's getting to know people, knowing journalists at publications, working out how your shows, venues, I think you also do some food and drink venues as well, don't you? So it's how do they look through the lens of that publication or that journalist? So networking is sometimes a dirty word, but it shouldn't be. Can you give any tips on networking, or at least show why networking is so important to what you do?
Yeah, I mean, networking is absolutely crucial. I also think that people need to remember networking's a long game. So you may meet somebody and you stay in touch with them and they're not necessarily useful, I hate the word, but for years later. But actually having built that relationship, it means when they need something you do, whether it's PR, marketing, whoever you are, an actor, you've kept that relationship and you've kept that sort of industry friendship. So I think that people have this misconception of networking that you meet someone and that's it, instantly you get what you want from that person. It's not like that, and that's why I think having genuine conversations when you're networking is so important. It's not just about meeting someone and going, hi, I need this from you right now. Yeah. Because they're not going to build that relationship with you. And I think for me, one of the important ways that we work, and for me it's personal and professional, is following up. If you have a nice chat with someone saying, I really enjoyed meeting with you, let's get a drink in a couple of months, and actually starting to build that connection. And that can be a time-consuming thing, but it's something that enables you to meet interesting new people and potentially bears fruits in the long term.
So that's something I think everyone should factor in, although it's like unbillable hours sometimes, networking, especially if you're a freelancer. Yeah. But it's obviously vital, isn't it? I think, as you said, to whether they are an individual actor, a venue producer, it sounds like networking is kind of like, should be put into your like schedule at least.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, some people hate it and they're not good at it. And I think there are different levels of networking. You can go to very high, fancy events where maybe it's a bit harder to have those interactions with people and you have to be more confident to go and break up a group and go, hi, I'm Chloe, nice to meet you. But there are also like really lovely low-key events, particularly in the theatre industry, and we're quite good at that. And so it's not impossible to meet people.
Do you have any networking hacks or tricks to like... Obviously, some groups are impenetrable. You can't get in there. But what would maybe be a networking tip for you, whether that's digitally or in person, if you have one?
I don't know if I have a tip. The thing that I do, which is now going to sound really creepy, is whenever I've had a chat with someone, I then pop their name down on my to-do list. Because if I'm having a really busy evening and I've maybe spoken to 50 people and I've just done a full, you know, day with tons of meetings, my brain just doesn't quite process things in the way I'd like it to. It's a sign of getting old. And so if I don't write things down, but it's the same as if I'm in a meeting, I have to write down my action straight away. So it comes back again to that follow-up idea. If I've not written down who I've spoken to, sometimes it doesn't stay with me. So that's one of the things I do to make it easier.
Yeah, no, I'm always about the follow-up is key. I always say to people, like, keep a spreadsheet, a notepad, whatever it is, who it was, what they did, maybe what they wore. So at least you remember, you have that talking point. I'm also quite a big believer in like fashion or clothes, almost like a sense of armor as well, aren't they? I think sometimes, so you know, like, right, if I'm networking tonight, not obviously wear a tuxedo, but dress, feel good, like dress for the job you want, as they say.
Yeah, you need, yeah, clothes can give you confidence if you're dressed appropriately. So, and yeah, you don't want to go into a smart drinks reception wearing a tracksuit. So it's also about understanding where you're going, and yeah, wearing something that makes you feel good about yourself so you do feel happy to infiltrate the conversation.
You have to juggle the practical and dressing well. Some of your press nights in general can be quite long. So do you start the night in a heel and then whack on a trainer towards the end? Or maybe a little one of those little hotel slippers?
You've probably seen me running about press nights in bare feet. I still often wear heels and sort of tot around at press nights in crazy stilettos, just because I think that was the world that I was trained in, especially coming from the art side of things. But they do, if I'm doing proper running around a building, that you will also see me carrying the heels.
Are press nights all devil wear? Prada in the fact of you've got a face sheet you need to memorize everyone? Because I guess what's also hard for you is that you are that smiling greeting face, but you're also like, it's like that swan with your legs under the water kicking like crazy because you're like, this needs to happen, this person needs to go in the press lineup. What is a press line like for a PR individual?
It completely depends on the scale of the show. So the kind of show that you're describing, and obviously you mentioned Devil, they're like West End style shows where we've got huge red carpets and we maybe have press on the red carpet interviewing. We've got famous faces attending as well as the press who we would need to recognise because we need to get them in front of the right journalists. And then I'd have lots of members of my team there and we'd all have different roles that have been allocated in advance. So some people will have learnt faces of some people, some people know they're with journalists. But then we also look after shows at smaller venues which are more low-key, but you still have to know who's coming and you still have to have that relationship and welcome them and sort of do the meet and greet and check they're okay and if they need anything. So our press nights are hugely different, you know, from a 60 seat that's upstairs to a pub through to a huge West End or to a regional theatre that we maybe only work at once a year for a press night. So it's about really knowing your roles before you go and knowing the timings, because the last thing you want is a PR who's going, oh my God, what's going on and where's that and what time was that and where's that person. So it's like the importance of organisation for PR cannot be underestimated.
We were doing, well, I was doing Vox Pops for one of your press nights recently, and you had the longest red carpet I've ever seen in my life. And that alone needed like a round of applause. I was like, Chloe, this is the biggest red carpet.
It was
like,
enormous, wasn't it?
You basically, as soon as you stepped on it, like a mile away, you could like strut all the way down. That was pretty epic.
Yeah, my feet hurt that night as I was running up and down and up and down. But in a way, that was huge and, you know, slightly crazy. But that enabled us to have space for press interviews. There were drinks on the carpet. There was a photo board for Paps. So having a carpet of that size is amazing. And we're just talking about a huge gala that's happening actually next year. So we're doing really advanced planning and we're looking at a big road closure for that to have a carpet that's even bigger.
Gosh, I need to get invited to this event just okay. to see. But I'm going to wear like an orthopedic shoe because it's going to be so long.
Yeah, exactly.
That support in the arch. How can producers or actors or anyone make life easier for PR? How can they work Ooh. With you more?
Yeah.
Or what would they say to you to be like, that is music to my ears?
I think I'm going to sound really whiny now. Sometimes just say thank you to your PR. I think, you know, a good PR for me is a PR that you almost don't know is there. You just see all of the press coverage for the show. The PR should never be part of that. But it doesn't mean there hasn't been one hell of a lot of hard work go into it. And I think especially with bigger shows, PR and marketing are the first scapegoats as soon as something doesn't sell. And that means that some of those big West End meetings can be quite tense and stressful. And I think just sometimes, and this applies to marketing firms as well, which is not me, obviously, we just do PR, but just actually saying to your PR, thanks, well, that article's great, means the absolute world to them, and they're probably more likely to push even harder the following week. And I know with my team, when just every now and again I get a lovely email for a client going, oh my God, that piece captures the show perfectly, or that was one of our top aims, we're thrilled, and thank you for calling about that. And you just see them light up, and actually the excitement of getting coverage is obviously great, but sometimes being recognised is nice.
So many interviews I got when I was working full-time as a journalist, because I actually... waiting, like, was it, whether it's the BAFTA TV Awards or Olivier Awards, is when the PR, because the PRs often come up the line first ahead and mean like, I've got so-and-so coming through, we'd like to speak. And like, having that moment quickly just to be like, how are you doing? Do you need water? Like, I love what you're wearing. That snowballed, like, or planted that seed that led to me getting exclusives like a week or two later. And that was me just being genuine. But I think that's so true. Like, people want to work with nice people. So it's lovely that you've been on the other end of that as well.
And it's like you said earlier about social media and you said about robots. And like, PRs aren't robots. Sometimes you can absolutely slog and you love the project and you think you've got a phenomenal story, but it doesn't land either because actually the journalist's just not interested or something's gone wrong in the world. And like I said before, it doesn't mean that the work hasn't gone into it.
That must be so hard for you guys because you obviously have to pitch a lot for clients. But again, so much of that, you're not sure what that goal will be or what the achievement will be. So that... And this wasn't even a question I sent you to prep, but how do you keep yourself then incentivized? Because that must be quite hard sometimes when you have quote unquote clear success when it's like in multiple newspapers or something like that. But how do you kind of keep yourself incentivized or all the people you manage incentivized?
Yeah. So I think the team work really collaboratively, which is a big helping part of that. So it means if somebody's, you know, run out of ideas, we can work together and we chat and we think a project through together rather than just someone being in their own little box. And I also think because we work on cross-arts projects, it does mean if you're demoralised with something or have had a bad morning with something, you can change and go on to a completely different project for a bit and just clear your brain. And I think that's so important. And I think that was why when I first set up all those years ago just doing visual art, it actually could feel really static some days, because no matter how phenomenal the exhibitions were, you're just picking up exhibition, exhibition, exhibition. So now being able to go, oh, hang on, yeah, that West End show, but I'm now going to turn in for an hour and do pitching on this show that's touring in vineyards across the country.
Nice. Yeah.
So I think having that variety is one of the ways that we keep the energy up. And also just the team are really tight knit, and I try and have a very fun office space. So it's meant to be a nice place for people to want to work.
How many emails do you get a day?
Me personally.
Yes, or you or the team, because you must get emails ranging from new clients, existing clients, individuals looking for representations. Yeah. How busy is that inbox?
So my inbox is horrible. It's out of control. We're in Edinburgh Fringe lead-up time at the moment, so it's a bit more intense than usual. So I get between 300 and 400 a day.
Wow, that would trigger me. That's a lot of emails.
It's a lot. I mean, only up until a couple of years ago, I was copied into all of our client emails, and then it got to a point where it was like, no, this can't happen anymore. So I'm now only copied into a very few projects, and I'm still getting 400 emails a day.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Because again, there's another thing I talk about, especially when I'm working with graduates, is like, how do you make an email stand out? Because you could be the best person, but it's getting in the room or getting your show coverage, which they're the soft skills maybe of the email and the networking, which are so important. Is there a way that can maybe make an email stand out to you? Is it the subject line? Is it the hook in the first paragraph? Is it because it comes from recommendation? Is there a way that kind of helps it stand out a bit for you?
It's kind of all of those things, but being polite as well. An email that's friendly and polite stands out immediately. Sometimes you read an email and they're sort of obnoxious is the wrong word, but so full of it that you think, oh, yeah, no, this hasn't done anything for me. But when you read an email that's genuine and shows someone's personality, they're the emails that stand out for me.
Someone once told me that I should speak an email before I write it, so then it sounds like, record it, sorry, and then write it back so it sounds like my voice. Is that maybe a tip that you think would help, or are there any email tips? Do you like content? Do you like it as a clickable link or attached? That's one question I get a lot. And I was like, you know what? Let me ask a PR person.
It depends on the journalist, which is really annoying. So we often do both, because different people like to receive things in different ways. I think, you know, you do have to think about subject line and what stands out and making it work. But it's also about simplicity. So the reading the email aloud thing. Sometimes people have tendencies to waffle in emails and use 20 words when they need one. And it's those emails that if you read back, you go, oh, my God, I wouldn't speak like that. Why have I said all of that? And so the reading it aloud can help simplify. I also think if for whatever reason you're dealing with an angry email, I always read that back to myself and go, okay, no, let's just calm down for a second and take that pause. But sadly, I don't think we'd have the time to read every email aloud. Otherwise, we'd be too slow. Right? It's all about pace.
Yeah, sometimes I get an email message and I'm like, I can't believe I said that. And then I go to my partner and he'll be like, no, like try not to add the emotion. Because that's the thing you've got to try and remember with an email. Like, they can only read those 5 lines, 2 paragraphs. So it's like, what tone? Maybe it's too many words, not enough words that has kind of caused that. So I think that's a good question.
And also it's hard. It's the same with email, text, all of these things now. You know, it can be hard to get the tone that somebody's intended. So I think sometimes we can read things and go, oh my God, that person's so rude and how dare they say that to me. And then you take an hour and do something else and read it back a bit more calmly and go, okay, maybe they didn't actually mean it to sound like that. I will reply calmly and professionally.
Crisis PR, that term is, I think, become on people's radar a lot more lately with things that are going on in Hollywood. Hopefully, a client will never need crisis PRs because it's been smoothly. But nowadays, because of social media, everyone can be a bit more reactive and vocal. Crisis PR, can you talk a bit about that if you have any examples, or maybe when that may need it, when that may be needed by a corporate client or a show?
Of course. So sadly, crisis comms is far more regular than it used to be. I think when we're working with a client long term and on a retainer, we will work with them to try and mitigate problems before they arise. So whether we know that something may be coming up and we've had time to prep statements, or it's a show that's opening that we know may be controversial or problematic in the current world, and we have time to develop a whole crisis plan about, okay, protesters, security, what do we need to say to the press? So if it's a long-term project, we have time. Of course, sometimes a crisis can just hit when you're not expecting it.
Surprise.
Yeah, lovely surprise. And I think then the important thing is to take a pause. Crisis stuff moves so quickly. So a couple of years ago at the biggest arts festival in the world, no surprises, we dealt with a huge crisis for a client that was very fast moving, and it hit the media for 2 solid weeks. and having to, you know, really have the statements and not be pushed into saying anything we didn't want. And I was the firing line for all of it because I didn't want the client talking directly to the press. So crises like that can be really intense. And with that one in particular, it hit the international media. So no exaggeration, I did 20-hour days for 2 weeks trying to get it out of the media. And we did turn it in the end. And by the end of it, we had positive articles coming out. But it can be really intense and you have to take the emotion out of it.
And for you, I guess, is it kind of using half left brain, half right brain, the fact of obviously you need to protect that brand, but then you're also thinking again of different angles or different things you can get out there to maybe help flip it. So is it a case of looking at, right, actually, let's look at this positive reaction it had, or this cast member can talk quite articulately about that. Are there kind of any things that really help?
It so depends on the crisis. Yeah. So like thinking about the one that I just mentioned a couple of years ago, we had to stop all messaging for any other shows that were going on, anything positive, because we knew that anything we said was going to get attacked for various reasons to do with that crisis. So I think if it's a smaller scale crisis, you know, that somebody said something wrong and it's got some social media traction, then 100% you can go, okay, what can we do to turn the tide? What positive interview can we do? What else have we got to announce? And look to change the focus. But with major crises, you often just have to pause and wait for it to pass.
I think that's kind of a metaphor for life, isn't it? Sometimes when it gets overwhelming, just pause.
Yeah, stop. And also, it's that whole thing again of taking an hour that, yes, crisis comms is really fast paced. And when we go into crisis mode for a client, it's me who leads on all crisis comms and I stop what I'm doing and I'm in crisis mode. But that doesn't mean you don't have half an hour to go, hang on a moment, I need to stop and I need to reread that. Because especially when you're developing a crisis statement, you have to go through every line a million times to go, how could this be misinterpreted? How is this going to get picked up? What happens if this line is read separately to the line after it? So you have to look at everything through a huge magnifying lens.
Because yeah, context can change everything, can't it? If it's they've like shortened the quote, put that quote with a different image. So gosh, that sounds exhausting.
Yeah, it can be full on. I did a small one this week and I was really tired on the day when it unexpectedly hit and got the call. And I was like, okay, right, brain has to focus, have to be absolutely awake and have to sort of go back to, we always have a crisis strategy of who needs sign off, you know, is it going to board level for a certain client? And then you have to unpick every single word you're about to use.
That's when the comfy shoes are on, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly. That is not a heels day.
And that's probably quite good because you've got a dog as well. And like, they're the best therapy sometimes. I guess if you're doing a remote day, that's probably then when you're like, come here, dog. Love
100%.
Me more.
And also, yeah, Bernie doesn't care that I'm having a bad day or I've had a late night with work. He's going, Mum, it's time for a walk.
Yeah.
It's time for another walk. I don't care about that crisis.
So how can an early stage producer or actor kind of think, right, I need to onboard PR, or they've not got a huge budget. Are there any kind of low hanging fruit, so to speak, in regards to PR that they can start implementing to kind of build their personal brand or that of a new show?
I think, so again, social media is really important, but I think we work with lots of early producers who, you know, don't have the budgets to do it, but they're fine to reach out to journalists, particularly online theatre platforms themselves. Not to do me out of job, because obviously I'm very valuable. But
employ her now, she's amazing. Thanks. If you want a huge carpet, hire Chloe.
So people can do things themselves. You know, of course, PR is really time consuming. And for anybody that does have the budget to take on an agency, I think it's a really valuable thing. And that's not just because it's what I do. It's the profile building and the awareness raising. But that's not to say that people can't achieve things without a PR.
You mentioned Edinburgh Fringe, and I think that is such a playground for a lot of actors, shows, producers, writers to kind of cut their teeth. But it's huge, which is great, but also because of that, there are shows everywhere, almost every hour. Obviously, you do so much work. When I was looking at your little press pack the other day, I was like, oh my gosh, get repetitive strain injury flicking through all your Edinburgh Fringe. Are there any tips for coverage in Edinburgh Fringe?
Oh, I mean, it is a beast.
Yes.
I think it has changed.
Each year it just gets bigger
and
bigger.
I absolutely love it, but there's no denying it can be difficult. I think more than ever, actually, Edinburgh is one time that I think if a show can't take a PR, it's really challenging. And I think that's when finding a budget for a PR firm is so important. And, you know, there are incredible freelance PRs who won't charge the same as a large agency. So there are different levels of PR you can get, which I think is really important to remember. Tips, I think in Edinburgh, if you're doing it yourself, especially, just don't overchase. You know, it can be frustrating and demoralizing when a journalist doesn't reply to you, but they're getting thousands of emails a day, particularly if they're covering the Fringe. And if you've sent one or two and they don't know who you are and it's not grabbed them, they're not going to cover. And sending 15 emails Someone mentioned that to me the other day. That is a genuine thing. Isn't going to help. If anything, that journalist is going to remember your name for 100% the wrong reason. Yeah. So I think it's just remembering that, yeah, it's annoying and it can be frustrating. And obviously you think your show is amazing, but there are lots of press. And just because somebody's not replying, somebody else is going to.
I think it's a really good question. If we kind of flip that in the fact of you get hundreds of emails a day, that person had 15 follow-ups. Press releases are so important now in the entertainment industry, whether it's theatre or film. And people maybe don't understand that when they've got a show, but they don't understand what's been in that press release to get bums on seats. So press release typically will be maybe 1 to 2 sheets, sometimes longer, have an image, some pull quotes from maybe creatives. Is there any kind of advice you would give to someone who, do you think it's worth actually actors reading a press release maybe and seeing what is put on the marketing material?
100%, especially if they're going to be talking about the show, they need to understand how it's being sold. For me, I think the first paragraph's always so important. You know, is there someone famous in it? What's the theme? Is it a world premiere? Getting across those important, exciting points immediately. Because if someone's not hooked by the basic information, they're not reading paragraph 2.
I think we, as if you're an on-stage creative, you're, it's so used to be like, you show how good you are. It's like, listen to me sing, watch me dance, or watch me act. But the performance time is quite minimal if you think about the amount of email and social media, updating Spotlight and websites. So I think people need, creatives need to almost listen to what you're saying there, read as much as they can, and then think, right, how do I write how good I am? If I was to write a press release for who I am right now, what would be in it? I think that would probably be quite an important thing to do.
Yeah, because it's about learning to disseminate what you want to say. And it's that horrible but really important PR term of an elevator pitch. You know, what is your elevator pitch for yourself, for the show? And if you can't get it across in that very short piece of time, then you need to rethink what you're saying.
No, I love that. I say that all the time to students again. Yeah. If you're in the elevator going from the 10th floor to the bottom, how are you going to sell yourself? You're not just, oh, I'm just an actor. It's like, who are you?
Yeah, 100%.
Before we go to our special little quick lightning round, last question. You have your own podcast, which I think is great. It kind of unpacks the theatre and entertainment industry, or arts and culture, I should say, but from your angle. Tell us a bit more about The Pink Podcast.
Thank you. So yeah, The Pink Podcast is about to head into its next season, which will be season 3, which is also going to include some quickfire Edinburgh Fringe episodes. That will be filmed from up there at the Fringe. But it's about having a conversation about themes in the arts and bringing together interesting people. And it's not just clients that CNC work with. It exists as a separate entity that I host. And it's all about interesting people having chats. And it's cross arts, which for me is really important in the same way that CNC is. So we'll sometimes bring a visual artist together with a theatre maker, but actually they can talk around the same conversation.
So that's really good, I think, to listen to, especially if you want to get into PR, because there are so many strands of it. So I think it's a great podcast that kind of gives a little flash to so many different areas of it, which is lovely.
Thank you.
I'm going to do one quick thing now before we let you go.
Oh,
this is brand new. This wasn't in the existing podcast. We've now got our own little lightning round. It's to end on a high. It's got a working title of Lights, Questions, Action.
I love it.
Are you ready? Okay.
So no, just, I'm not.
Okay. Just think whatever comes to your head. So my first question is, what was the first job you had in the industry?
Oh, I was an intern at English Heritage when I was 16 and went on a boat along the Thames to survey London's bridges.
Oh, nice. Okay. It's a long press night. What is your go-to outfit, head to toe, quickly?
Black jumpsuit and high heels.
Love that. At the end of a long press night, what is your drink of choice?
Oh, probably a white wine or glass of champagne.
Dream venue for a press launch?
A boat.
Ooh, very nautical.
Yeah.
If you could whisper one PR tip into an actor's ear just before they go on the red carpet, what would it be?
Smile, be polite, and engaged with the people you're chatting to.
If you weren't in show business, what would you be doing?
Oh, that's a killer. I'd be a lawyer.
Okay. Bill over there. Weirdest PR request?
Oh, they've had people try and bring their dogs into shows. Who aren't support dogs, they just fancy coming along with the dogs.
You're like, it's not a seat for that.
Yeah.
No. As much as we love dogs, we are dog-friendly.
Yeah, I'm like, Bernie
here,
doesn't go to the theatre.
No. Industry buzzword you hate. It may be elevator pitch, but is there
reaching
another...
Reaching out.
I'm just reaching out for you, so take that out of your emails.
Oh, it's horrible.
Okay, no reaching out. Most unexpected place you've secured press coverage?
Ooh, Gardener's World.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
A while ago now,
read.
But yeah.
And then my last question, we've had a great time. Are you someone who loves leaving podcast-sized voice notes, or do you just love a text?
Text.
text straight there.
Always there easy.
Text, no reaching out. That's it.
Exactly. Don't reach out to me.
She will reach out to you.
Send me a lovely email.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time, Chloe.
It's been an
absolute pleasure. All that's left to say is make sure you subscribe and leave your reviews wherever you listen to or watch your podcast. And I'll see you next episode.